Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, dancers, writers, musicians, athletes, comics, you name it. Folks who are center stage, backstage, on camera, or behind the scenes. Sit back and listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome again to the Rising from the Ashes edition of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden, and tonight we have another pro wrestling special. Our pro wrestling special features a panel of experts in the subject of professional wrestling. Tonight we have John Orlando, host of the PVD cast, returning to Foul Players Radio to join the discussion with Mike Dells, another regular guest on Foul Players Radio. He's the host of Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast. And Ed Stilk returns, a longtime friend and a wrestling historian who recently contributed information to the book Battleground Baltimore by Graham Coffin. Our panel discusses pro wrestling, independent wrestling leagues, as well as thoughts for the future. Subscribe for free at www.foulplayersradio.com or listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Cast, Deezer, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Index, Overcast, Castro, Castbox, or Podfriend. Or you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. The Foul Players of Perryville are now booking murder mystery shows for the late summer and fall of 2021. Indoor or outdoor venues, trains, boats, office parties, fundraisers, or just for the heck of it. www.foulplayersofperryville.com, or you can also reach us by email, foulplayersperryville@yahoo.com, or 443-600-0446. We'll be back with our second pro wrestling special right after these words.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Chris Rastalli of Breaking the Fourth Wall. If you enjoy our show, you can find it on YouTube. Just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment, or just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment on Anchor.fm, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or wherever quality podcasts can be heard. And also, you can find us on all the social medias. Just look for Realm of the Mist Entertainment, and I will catch you on the other side.
I'm Michael, the host of the semi-monthly podcast, In a City Like Yours. Join me as I chat with interesting people with interesting life stories. You can listen to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can follow us on Twitter at IACLYS Podcast, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at In a City Like Yours Podcast. Please feel free to let me know what you think. And keep coming back for the many interesting stories in a city like yours.
Hey, this is Don Smith from the Life Radio Show. If you've always wanted to learn more about the world of low-budget filmmaking and even lower-budget comedy, tune into the Life Radio Show. You can live stream the show at WWSU1069.org on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, or find us wherever you find podcasts and like and follow the Life Radio Show on Facebook for live video and other shenanigans.
Hey, what's up? This is Chris Rastalli of Realm of the Mist Entertainment. The podcast you are listening to is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com. That's s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and information on those shows, as well as information and ability to contact publicist Steve Joyner for more information. Just go to the website and check out the family. Ladies and gentlemen, until then, enjoy the show.
And welcome back to Foul Players Radio. We're having another wrestling special tonight, and I have with me the host of the PVD cast, all the way from the great state of Ohio, Mr. John Orlando, who's been active in some independent wrestling in Ohio for many years. Of course, we bring back my good friend Ed Stilk. who is a wrestling historian. He recently contributed information to the book Battleground Baltimore by Graham Cawthon, and he knows just about everything there is to know about wrestling, as does my other guest co-host tonight, Mr. Mike Dells.
Ooh, yeah.
Who is the host of the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast, one of the co-hosts on that show, and also a fellow barbershop singer. So welcome, gentlemen. Good to see you all tonight. Great to be able to get together with you.
Yeah, Mikey, good to see you and hear from you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what I'd kind of like to do here, and, you know, John, I'd sort of like to have your opinion since, you know, you've been with us for a while. You know, Ed's been following it, and Mike, and years ago, you know, when I would, you know, when I would watch wrestling, we would watch it on WBFF 45 here in Baltimore, and the Baltimore Arena was a big hub of professional wrestling activity, and the wrestlers we watched back in those days were a lot, the wrestling itself was a lot more holds oriented. You know, you would have people doing the headlocks, and you would have them do the figure four leg locks, and you would have them do the sleeper holds and the cobra clutch. People were afraid of what hold they were going to get into. It kind of seemed like, you know, it eventually evolved into people flying through the air a lot more, flying out of the ring, fighting with barbed wire and glass, doing somersaults off the top rope onto tables and breaking them. And the injuries that these folks suffered, many of them ended up getting involved with painkillers and addictions, and it really had a detrimental effect on their health. I was just wondering what your opinion was of the future of wrestling in that sense, because, you know, in the NFL for a number of years, you know, players have been getting bigger and stronger. A lot of, you know, the quality of life of former players has suffered from, you know, pinched nerves, concussions, also addiction to painkillers and things like that. Do you see, you know, the NFL starts throwing more flags and there's more penalties and they're kind of restricted on how you can hit somebody? Do you see wrestling maybe changing their attitude, maybe changing the way they go about it, maybe going back to the basics a little bit more, or what do you see in the future of this?
Well, to start off, I will say the one key word you used, Michael, was evolving. I think wrestling is always evolving, much like all sports and all entertainment and whatnot. I don't know if we will ever go back to the way in which you described in the 80s, there was a focus on holds more so than some of the outlandish kind of acrobatics, if you want to call it that. I don't see that ever happening. I don't see us going back. What I do see is I see that maybe you might see a new generation of wrestlers who start to pay homage to that and start realizing to work smarter, not harder. You know, because you're absolutely right. The dives, they hurt you. You know, one of the things that I never really thought, if I may, I'll just tell a quick story. I had an opportunity to talk to Tracy Smothers, the late Tracy Smothers, at an indie show a couple of years ago. And the one thing he mentioned that I never thought of was the worst injury he ever took was a simple slingshot, you know, slingshot dive to the floor, you know, because you got to catch. And he goes, shoulders, just murdered his shoulders, and something as simple as that can do a lot of damage. So I don't see us going backwards to the way it was in the 70s and 80s, but I do see that maybe that we might get more people trying to implement a different arsenal, just because A, it's something different, and B, maybe to try to alleviate some of those injuries. I don't know. That's a hard question to answer. I don't know what Mike and Ed feel.
Well, they have dialed it back a little bit already. I mean, if you think about it, in the WWE, they stopped chair shots to the head. They stopped allowing people to use the pile driver. So in that sense, some of the violent aspects and some of the chance taking, they've recognized to avoid injuries, but you're still going to see the acrobatics. I don't think the way wrestlers are trained these days. I mean, I don't think they're trained in actual Greco-Roman wrestling. They're trained on how to take a bump and hopefully how to get themselves over in a promo. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different story. So yeah, I mean, in the injury front, you see things dialed back, but I don't think you're going to see the sport or the business the way it was ever again, back in the 70s, 80s or whatever.
Yeah, you both make some very, very strong points there. If we were to be watching in this day and age, the product that was on late 70s, early 80s, that was on television these days, the attention span might not stick now. Because we grew up with it, you know, we would find a respect and appreciation for it. But the bells and whistles, not even just the dives. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, bells and whistles and lights and pyrotechnics and, you know, presentation on television and how it goes across streaming services. I mean, that's what they're more focused on. But I will tell you, and like John was saying as well, some of the most serious injuries are not that spectacular as far as, oh, a guy dove over the top rope and broke his neck. No, it's more like Triple H tried to run off the ropes and blew out a quad. You know, Vince McMahon tried to run down to the ring during the Royal Rumble and blew out both of his quads. And, you know, it's things like that. And a lot of the things that we don't ever see that are mostly the injuries that are coming up. Now, of course, back then in the late 70s, early 80s, it was about, you know, you hold a camel clutch on a guy for too long and you're, you know, choking him out and breaking his neck. And that was a story that was told before this whole kayfabe thing came in. But I will tell you, and I think both of you guys said this, there's implements of this evolving product where there are some throwbacks that are guys that are doing more holds and FTR, no flips, just fists, you know, things like that. There's a couple of people. So there's a place for it. There's a place for everything. And then, you know, this past weekend, there was a place for exploding ring, barbed wire, you know, whatever. And it's all about the promoter too, you know, depending on, John, you said you know a promoter and he's a real nice guy and you trust him and everything. That's what it's all about. You gotta believe in what you're doing. So the mitigating risk at the best possibility. But I will tell you, I would love to see a match like a Bob Backlund and a Bruno Sammartino kind of type, you know, just where hold for hold 60 minutes and just trying to one up each other. I would love that personally. I would be all in for that. I wouldn't be fast forwarding anything. That's just my personal thing.
And you know what, Mike, I agree with you. I think that like one of my favorites is Zack Sabre Jr. From New Japan, who is not a real big high flyer, but just watching him work that British style and go from chain hold to hold to hold to hold. And just the grace that he does it with is amazing. And, you know, so getting back to what we were talking about is I think that you need to have a little bit of everything for the fans out there. I feel, quite frankly, that that's where the two companies right now that are on major networks, you know, AEW and WWE, I don't think they're doing that too much. I think that they're giving you the same thing, okay, just with different people. And I think that's why ratings are down. I think that's why interest is low, because you're just doing the same thing time in and time out, time in and time out. And I feel like, you know, again, a prime example, ECW, sure, they had the New Jacks where he's going to hit you with everything that's not bolted down. And you had the barbed wire matches, but you also had Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero putting on a clinic on how to wrestle. And then you had a little bit of everything in that small promotion. And I think that, you know, to be honest, I think if we saw a little more of that from AEW or a little more of that from WWE, that maybe we'd start seeing the interest and we see the ratings going up a little bit. I mean, that's oversimplifying it because there's lots of other things involved with those two companies. You know, it's not as cut and dry as I just made it sound.
Mike, they were trying to, as he was asking about, you know, resurrecting the past. I think Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins with NWE Power tried that in a sense, because they did it in a studio. It looked just like it did in the 80s coming out of Atlanta. And I checked some of it out. It was interesting. And so if there was a market, I know it closed down because of the pandemic, I think that they may be trying to relaunch that. I thought I heard that. And yeah, you know, so if there's a market for it, people will buy it. And if there's not, they won't. So, I mean, but they are trying. Somebody is actually trying to promote that style.
Okay.
So, Mr. Spedden, I think we've got a market for you if you want it. You know, maybe all of us will create a promotion when this thing is over, and you know, we'll put together some stuff, and then you can be the voice of that promotion.
I'll be the voice of it. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm too old to be getting in there and going flying off.
Well, I mean, we need a money man. So
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you know.
There we go. I'll what I'll do is I'll make my character the Viking. And
we get that over because you already got TV exposure, Mike.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I was like, you need cash now. And I come in and I like, you know, steal people's money and throw it out to people. And that'll be my thing. I'll be a heel.
Okay.
Hey, you're Viking. You got to rape and pillage the audience.
Wow. Exactly. Come running in and pillaging and, you know, taking over and coming in kind of like Braveheart. I guess that would be my shtick.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
I love it.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about the leagues that you work in with John in Ohio.
So I started out, I actually started way, way back, 99. I started working like some backyard promotions because, to be honest, I couldn't get in anywhere. I didn't, some of it was I didn't know how to, mm-hmm. and other was that there was a promotion in Columbus, Ohio, but they never returned any emails or anything. So instead I found this backyard group. And look, you know, I know backyard wrestling gets a huge, you know, black eye in that, but I mean,
it's somewhere pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah. You had, I wanted to do this. I wanted to be a ring announcer. I wanted to do play by play. They were okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. You know? And the dudes that were doing it, they also realized that, hey, you can't jump off the roof of the house because you'll hurt yourself. So it was really more like character development and more really mm-hmm. boring wrestling, to be honest. But that led me into meeting a promoter here in Columbus who started up another promotion called Fire and Ice Wrestling. And he was talking to me about another set of circumstances for trying to book another few folks. And he had mentioned he didn't have a ring announcer. And I said, I'd like to do it. He goes, okay, February 22nd, can you be in this town called Crooksville? Yeah, I have no idea where the hell that is, but yeah, I'll be there. You know, and I went and he was pleased. And then that's how I started getting booked. And then within being 6 months in the biz, there was a split between some guys. Some guys went and started their own thing. And Mike, I'm sure you've experienced this, Ed, you've probably heard about it as well. You know, you get egos, even at indie level, you get the egos a little bit.
I've been backstage. I've helped out with some indies, like quote unquote front office stuff. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. 100% see that, you know, there's a lot of ego in professional wrestling. Just some people hold it very, very well, but you know, to be a character in the business of professional wrestling, even on the indie level, you got to take yourself seriously, maybe even more seriously. So, you know, I totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So these guys split. So the promoter asked me, do you want to help on creative? And I'm like, sure. Yes. I'd love to. I'd love to help book. Yes. And so within about 6 months, that company went under, another company came up. So I worked there and I worked for them for maybe 8 months. They didn't last very long. And, at that point, I was on a show with a gentleman by the name of Big Guns, Jeff Cannon. He was a wrestler out of Coshocton, Ohio, which is kind of a small town in central Ohio, but it's a little more on the eastern side. And he had a bunch of kids that he was training, a bunch of guys he was training. And he was like, hey, John, I'm starting this company. Would you be interested in being the ring announcer? Yeah, I would. And I mean, Jeff became more than just a coworker. He became a very good friend and a colleague. And I was there for, geez, until the company got sold in 2016 when Jeff retired. And then I ended up starting. There was a couple of new promotions here in Columbus, NOW Wrestling and OWA Wrestling. And so I've been doing play-by-play for them and their you know, DVD and IWTV product. So
fantastic.
Interesting. Interesting. So yeah, you've been at this for a good while, you know, it sounds like going back to 99 and
yeah.
So yeah, so you kind of see how, you know, and these things do evolve because there's so many of these, you know, smaller federations that end up being huge after a while. You know, I'll tell you a story, a friend of mine that I knew back in the 80s, he was just managing a friend of mine's band, a guy that I knew. And then I turned on the television one night and Ed, you remember Steel Town?
Yeah,
where the flea market is over in it's in eastern Baltimore County, and I turned it on.
Wrestling story about Steel Town. When you're finished,
okay. And so I turned it on and I saw, I was like, "That's Brian! Holy cow! What's he doing wrestling?" You know. So I didn't hear from him for a couple of years, and all of a sudden, you know, I knew what his stage name was, and all of a sudden. You know, I hadn't heard from him in years. I was at Walmart and I was in the toy section. I was getting like some gifts for some, you know, young relatives we had. I looked around and I see this action figure and it's him. And I was like, holy cow, what the hell? So I called my friend Fritz and I said, did you know that he's like got his own toys and stuff? And he's like, oh yeah, yeah. He's huge in that now. Yeah. He's doing real well. He's in Japan and he's going all over the world doing it. And it was Axel Rotten. I didn't know if you knew him or not, John, but he was a friend of mine. Unfortunately, we lost him a couple of years ago. But yeah, hell of a nice guy, hell of a nice guy. Whenever he was in town, he used to introduce our bands. He would come up on stage, you know, kind of in character and, introduce us, you know, be kind of like be the MC for the night when we were playing and you're really good guy, really good guy. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing how, you know, sometimes I guess if you're in the right place at the right time, it'll grow just right, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I did just when you mentioned Steel Town, you know, what I was doing was putting up web content for local indie promotions. And once I started getting to know some of the performers, I would suggest them to like another place that I would work in Pennsylvania. I was up there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just remembering Steel Town, it was no longer called Steel Town, but it became the Green Room.
Yes.
Whole place. So, but anyway, so one of the promotions I was helping out with was running a show there. And where the wrestling was separated from the bar. And I'm like, I'm supposed to watch these damn matches and you know, do a recap, not just who won, but, you know, storytelling a little bit. And so I go to get a beer on the other side of the bar and there's a window with a cut through the bar and you can see the ring perfectly. So I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to take notes here when I watch the matches. And the promoter comes by and he looks at me. He goes, are you going to be okay doing this from here? I'm like, as long as they're serving at the bar, I'm going to be great. You're going to get the best writing you ever got. I had a lot of nerve. And then I got friendly with some of the wrestlers and we'd be up in, I won't say where, but anyway, the flea market where they were running had an at back alley and that's where everybody was drinking. And one night the Hardy Boys were wrestling for the promotion and it was a some sort of tournament or whatever, but they had the main event somehow or another. And I'm out there. One of the guys, the local wrestlers goes, aren't you supposed to be in there watching a match? I'm like, somebody will film me and I'll make something up. Who cares?
Right.
Just give me the finish. I'm good.
Yeah.
It's interesting you bring up Steel Town, Green Room and everything. That's actually way, way back many centuries ago. That's where I had my first event where I was going to one of the schools around here and I got to, you know, help unload the truck and put up the guardrails and everything like that. And they, you know, as I was training, they said, oh, you know, there's this main event spot where there needs to be a big pull apart. And we need like security guys or whatever. And, you know, we're going to give you an orange shirt. You come out and you do it. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'll do it. I'm not getting paid. I don't care. I'm on the show. I'm inside the guardrail. I'll do it. And man, this was 20, 25 years ago now. And I still remember that it was in the flea market part, actually. And clear as day. And I still get a little nostalgia when I go past that building because that flea market's still there. And I think the Green Room is still there, the billiards and everything. But
yeah, it is.
Man, I just, it was, to me, it was WrestleMania, but I know that, you know, it's not, it's what where indie wrestling happens, places like that. But man, I would have thought it was WrestleMania. I was a part of that pull apart, and then, man, I was hooked for life. I could not, I couldn't step back and take out of it. It was so cool. So yeah, we all got stories about that little area in East Baltimore and Dundalk right there.
Oh, we sure
so
did.
What's kind of the weirdest place you've had a show?
Wow.
Oh, wait a minute. Six Flags down in Prince George's County, but you had roller coasters all around.
That was so much fun, dude. I love that.
But it was the weirdest place that I could think of anyway.
Yeah, it was weird. I think it was in one of their like their stunt theaters or whatever. That's
yeah, yeah, exactly. Was. Exactly right.
And, you know, there was like a 5,000 seat theater and maybe a couple hundred people showed up and they all spread out. So it looked like COVID social distancing. And it wasn't, yeah, wasn't a lot of people. But, man, I mean, just being out there and kind of being in the amusement park feel, it was fun. And then we all got to go ride the rides, you know, afterwards. So I remember that being like October, like after season. It was cold outside.
It was a little chilly. I remember that well.
Yeah, I had a suit on. I was doing the ring announcing, though. I did have a suit on, and I did change before the roller coaster. But that was a strange place to do it. In Pennsylvania somewhere, it was sort of like in the middle of a country field or whatever it was. It was like a summer thing. It was hot, really hot. You know, no ventilation, no nothing, very dry. And it was in the middle of a field and they just, no chairs, no nothing, no guardrails. They just said, people come up and watch. And I was refereeing at that time. And, I mean, it was weird just because, I mean, you look out, there's like nothing. People just walk out into the middle of the field. And, yeah, people were changing in their cars and there was really no.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was beautiful. There was no admission, nothing. It was just a promotional thing to get some work in the middle of the summer. So that was kind of weird.
I popped for changing in your car. I know. Yeah, I mean, changing in a car, bathroom. Geez, I can only think shower stalls. Just yeah. Just
Ed, do you remember there was an MCW show at the Avenue where they used to have Della Rosa's there?
And I was going to mention that, but I went with the other one instead.
No,
but,
that's okay. Now, so
and you know what was weird about that? The ones at the Avenue, they would have Tony Della Rosa and somebody else doing commentary live over the mic. It's the oddest thing in the world. I can't imagine you're wrestling and and they say something they don't like a spot or whatever right over the mic. You be turning looking at those guys. What the hell?
Yeah, I was refereeing during one of those, and I was in like five matches. I was doing every single one of them, and I was finding myself being a fan listening to the commentary. But I'm like, I'm trying to listen to the guys in the ring, and you know they're telling me different things to do, and I'm like, oh my god, and. Everybody's just having conversations like, man, they need to shut up, you know, because it was kind of blowing up their spot. You know, they had a story to tell, but it was still fun. And talking about the changing room, there was a place that's now called the All-American Burger or Z Burger or whatever it is. It's on the corner, little burger place. I changed in the bathroom right there. And because Della Rosa's was open, but they had a lot of the wrestlers and things going in there. So since I was a referee, I was like, all right, I don't want to go interrupt those people. But that was odd. But the ring was right in the middle of
changing by the trash cans in Della Rosa's because it's
cemented off. Dumpster right where that dumpster is. That's where the entrance was. It's a big brick wall, and that's where the guys were coming out of. And it's like, man, they're coming out of the garbage can. but that was fun though. You know, it was right in the little little driveway in between the movie theater and the restaurant. And, you know, they had the Avenue out there, and that's promoting. Like, I was walking around the Avenue, you know, handing out flyers, like, come on over. Is this free? Just come on up, walk up and watch it. And, so that was fun. That was my first experience, like, with an actual WWE superstar. Goldust was on one of those shows. Dustin Rhodes, or Dustin Runnels, you want to call him. He was putting on his face paint. And I had come up and I was talking to the promoter or something like that. And he was putting on his face paint. And he was just telling stories. And he was like, you know, kid, you might want to listen to this. And he was telling us a fun story. And then I said, you know, be happy to referee you later tonight. And he's like, yep, just follow me, kid. You won't be, you'll be all right. I mean, no problem. Mm-hmm. Real nice guy.
Right. And John, did you say you've refereed as well as ring announced too?
No, I've never refereed. I worked one match one time. Mm-hmm. And I was happy with that. that was good. I was A-okay with that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of capped off a storyline that myself and another wrestler, Jock Sampson, who was kind of bullying me for a few months. And so he had pitched this idea and I'm like, okay, it's got to make sense. Mm-hmm. It's got to make sense. That's my only thing, is it's got to make sense. And so he and I pitched ideas back and forth, mm-hmm. finally found something. I'm like, okay, this makes sense. This makes sense. Cause I had help to beating, you know, the guy he had just beat, you know, helped me out. That's how I ended up winning. I was like, that works. That works right there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, never refereed.
You and I got a similar story there too. I was, it was in Pennsylvania somewhere. I was a referee and ring announcer, you know, kind of back and forth, but I was more refereeing at this point. And there was one heel wrestler that was really, it was some sort of inherent story that was being told without even any of us planning it. And he was bullying all the referees, but he ended up bullying me. And he bullied me as a ring announcer, bullied me as a referee. And it turned into this whole story, which turned into a match that was built up. And I was like the tentative. I'm not a wrestler. I'm a referee. I'm a ring announcer. And but I got in a few good shots and I got myself all pumped up. I took a super kick to the face, got knocked out. But he waited way too long and somebody, interfered from the outside. And I got some kind of roll up on him. The other referee fast count and I won. I was like, I was getting carried out, but I won. So wrestling is awesome storytelling. I never asked for it. I'm there to put the other guys over. That's what the referees and the ring announcers are there to do, is put everybody else over. But it's nice once in a while when you get, if it makes sense, if you throw that in. Ed, I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, if you're more of the wrestling purist, I know you haven't watched the product in a while. But you've been backstage. You see, you know, sometimes ring announcers, referees, managers get involved. It's nice once in a while to mix it up.
Oh, no doubt about it. I was offered that a couple of times and took advantage of it once in a while, pull aparts and things like that. You know, it's kind of, and I got, you know, you got to remember too, at my age, I wasn't ever looking for much physical contact. You know, I bruise easily these days. But yeah, I did that, you know, here and there. And that was always kind of fun to get involved. And, you know, my quick story is that I was well into my 40s when I just, you know, following wrestling for as long as I did. And I was like, you know, why not try to get involved and try to rekindle, you know, like a love for a business and get involved locally and just, you know, see what I would be good at doing. And for most of the places that I was helping out with, it was website content. I actually named one of our top stars maneuvers. He had no name for it. I, you know, put a name on that. When I ended up working with Lancaster Championship Wrestling, this is after the Maryland stuff, things happened. So I was up there helping out. And I think the most enjoyable thing that I did in the business was get in touch with guys that I knew from the Maryland promotions and see if they wanted a local gig. You know, to take a shot up in Lancaster, and we were running Friday, Saturday nights. And the best part was to do what I was doing up there. We were running at the Lancaster Host Hotel. They had a really big event center. And so to come up Friday and Saturday to cover the cards, I had free hotel room. So that was my compensation in the business, which that ran for year and a half, 2 years. You know, the promotion had its problems and dissolved. But that was my story, basically. And I guess the funniest thing I ever saw there was the difference between Maryland. I know Mike can tell you, the state athletic commissions are so different. It's unbelievable. In Maryland, they're completely strict. And then I'm up in Lancaster, and Mean Mark Mest, who's like a kind of indie hardcore legend, he comes out with some sort of, you know, like flaming, I don't even know what it was. You know, I would say a bat because of Foley, but he, something was on fire and he put it right on the ring apron and part of the ring was on fire. And the promoter's standing there like there, he has, doesn't have a freaking care in the world. I'm like, are you kidding me? He goes, Ed, you're from Maryland. This is a different story. Let it go. It was only for a brief couple seconds, but I was just not used to seeing anything like that.
Yeah, the states are right next to each other, and right in Pennsylvania and Maryland, and it's amazing. You step over the line. Maryland has, you know, nothing against their athletic commission, but the handcuffs are on. So you got to be really careful and really creative. You step over into Pennsylvania, and that's where I said they don't have guardrails. They don't have the rubber gloves in the pockets, you know, it's not that they're not careful. They are, but they have a lot more freeway, a lot more freedom and lenience in there.
I did notice, Mike, when I was up there, the pre-show stuff, like in Maryland, it was all the blood pressure checks and this and that. And so much was just going on in Pennsylvania. People were just in the locker room, just getting ready to go.
Yep. I don't even remember. You know, I'm not putting down Pennsylvania. I don't know anybody on this radio show who's listening. You know, I'm not putting up Maryland or down Pennsylvania. But, you know, I don't ever remember checking in with a doctor. I checked in with Lou so many times here in Maryland, you know, before he, you know, at Lou and everybody in the Maryland State Athletic Commission. I remember, you know, checking in, signing forms, doing blood pressure, doing running in place for, you know, however long to make sure you can your blood pressure doesn't get too high. But I went to Pennsylvania, and this is my first year in the business. I'm learning how to referee here, which is fantastic. They say, hey, you want to work a show in, you know, Columbia, Pennsylvania? Oh, yeah, let's go. It's only an hour away. Let's do it. So I went there, and, you know, you're a referee, and it's a big five-man main event. It's no holds barred, no rules. I'm like, okay, good. So I don't have to do much because I don't have to disqualify anybody. I don't have to count anybody out. However, you know, one of the performers just pulls me aside and said, you ever taken the kendo stick? Boom, right over the head. And, you know, just beautiful. And he introduced himself to me after the match was over. So that's good. and it's the kendo stick. It stung. But I mean, he was careful with it. But yeah, it's amazing. And the differences. But yeah. It's a lot of fun. And Mr. Spedden, you can hear us telling stories, man. It just there's just a lot of fun stuff about this business. And I hope we get to get back to it sometime in the near future, Maryland, Pennsylvania, anywhere. And Ohio, I don't know, how's your athletic commission out there in Ohio, John?
Well, I'll be honest. Up until recently, it's been they're pretty low key. You know, I think the best way to describe it is that they kind of just sit back. But when something happens, boom, they're there. You know what I mean? Now, I say that, you know, up until the pandemic. Now, in the pandemic, there has been a lot of chit chatter between the State Athletic Commission, who also runs, and I'm sure it's the same thing where you guys are at. They run MMA and boxing as well. So there's been a lot of constant contact about how to run shows, when to run shows. Here in Ohio, there's been a few companies that have run. One started, I believe, in December. They started running with social distancing and hand sanitizing and limited number of fans. And then there's been a couple more that've done the same thing. So, you know, people are taking it seriously, and that's good, but there's still, a couple of promotions are still holding off and waiting till, making sure everybody's going to be safe and sound.
Yeah. It's rough. You know, it's not, you know, about the fans and everything, which is fantastic, but sorry, we hijacked your show, Mr. Spedden. We apologize. it's a matter of, you know, these guys got to get in the ring. They got to be within 6 feet of each other. They got to be breathing. They got to be, you know, they got to be touching each other. They're going to be sweating. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on. So a lot of people are being really vigilant with tests and not being symptomatic of anything before you even travel to get in the car, to, you know, or wherever you're coming from. Because I know a lot of guys, because Maryland's not running anything, so a lot of guys are traveling out to places that are actually doing things and allowing things. A lot of people going down to Florida or going to Texas, where apparently they never had COVID. They're not even wearing masks anymore. So,
I had COVID.
Nothing against Texas, by the way.
Big deal.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I'm glad, you know, we're kind of erring on the side of caution here, you know, taking it safely. I've done a couple of things with a couple of promotions just on, you know, the back end, nothing, it's specifically serious, just kind of helping out what we can do while the pandemic is happening and while we can keep it fresh. So that when we get back to it, you know, there's something to do and then we can get back to it safely. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Love the business. Still love the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that there have been a couple of, states that have had different protocols for all entertainment, when it comes to, you know, COVID and everything like that. And, I could definitely see where there would be a risk with this here. And I guess, they are really, taking, I guess people are kind of handling it as they see fit, I guess, from state to state. Now, let me ask you this too here. You know, one thing I kind of like to ask my bands when I have them on, and sometimes actors too, especially the ones that are on stage, are kind of about Spinal Tap moments or anything that you've witnessed in a match that shouldn't have happened. And, but you had to kind of roll with it, for example, if somebody was really hurt and you had to just keep going with it, or you had to, Mike, for example, you're the ref. I mean, I guess there would have to be some kind of protocol in place. If somebody was really hurt, you would have to,
usually
the other guy pin them or something,
Let everybody know. Yeah. Ed knows. If you throw up the X, 99 times out of 100, that's telling everybody, hey man, something's wrong. And we got to roll with it and fix it. Now, a lot of that stuff is live in front of a crowd, so there's a lot of different ways to fix it. Normally there'll be a quick finish to a match, somehow it'll just get over one way or another. Now in Maryland, it's a little different. Sometimes, if there is a drop of blood that's seen anywhere from any part of the body for any reason, it'll be the Maryland State Athletic Commission coming around the ring and, saying, stop the match, stop the match.
Elaborate on this one, Mike, stuff.
Yeah.
I got a good one.
That's when they stop everything. No finish, nothing. They just, put towels around and clean it up and get everybody out of there. But in my case, different things. Here's one for you guys. I was refereeing somewhere up in Severna Park, Glen Burnie, and there was a tag team match going on. Second match of the night, actually. And somebody was whipped into the ropes and the middle rope snapped. And if you guys know anything, I'm sure Ed and John, about these ropes. These are, steel cables that are wrapped around with tape. And usually, pretty tight. And one snapped right in the middle. Like somebody went up to the second rope to go jump off and do it. And it snapped. Nobody got hurt. It didn't whiplash on anybody. Luckily, thank God, that match kept going and finished, which is beautiful. And then after, in the middle of the second and third match, we had to basically take that entire rope off and replace it with one of the spare ropes, which was a different type of rope, different width, different thickness, different color, looked weird, felt weird, but at least it was there. It was safe. And I can hear that thing in the referee as being a referee. And luckily me and the four guys that were in that match didn't get hurt. It's like, damn, that thing just snapped and whiplashed. It was crazy. But, we finished it, but that's a story. I'll never forget that.
Huh. And I'd like to elaborate on what Mike was just saying. I'm going to take it to the national stage to follow this up because it's kind of interesting that the very first time that Ric Flair ever wrestled in Baltimore at the Civic Center at the time, or the arena, was against Jack Briscoe. This match is actually on WWE Network, if that still even exists. This is my perspective, what went on at the end of this match. I'm sitting in the lower concourse fairly close. Behind me, two very, very large guys are trashed and they're getting into it. So, this is 1984. I'm in high school. I mean, Mike and I are at Calvert Hall at the time. But so I'm at this, Ric Flair, first time ever, Jack Briscoe, legendary. I'm turning behind me and watching two guys getting ready to kill each other. And they did. They started just swinging, and one guy just took the worst of blood on the seats. And the entire, probably 6,000-7,000 at the Civic Center that night. And everybody's looking at this fight because it was so obvious. And all of a sudden, the second that the fight got obvious, that the match ended. And after the referee jumped out, the X came up, and they had people come up to my section where the fight was. So the fight was the main event, not Ric Flair.
Wow.
You know, I think the only thing I can, and I'm sure Mike, you could probably, you might be familiar, might be put in the same situation. My good friend was a referee with OCW for years. Somebody didn't kick out. The match ended. That wasn't the way it was supposed to end, but the dude didn't kick, and he was really, and my buddy Adam was like, oh man, I screwed up. And the professionalism of those two guys, the guy that was supposed to kick, he goes, no, you did what you had to do. I was the dumbass that didn't pay attention. And he goes, you did what you had to do. He goes, I'm not mad at you. The match went short and it didn't end the way it was supposed to end.
Yeah. The referee that's something it's pretty universal through all of the promotions that I've worked as a referee. It's the worker's responsibility to kick out. And, you know, there's a lot of communication going on during the match. But, I mean, if you don't count to three, you know, and something, then the shoulders are down for whatever reason, or if there's a extremely blatant disqualification that needs to be called, you know, if somebody slaps a referee in the face and it's not supposed to happen, it's like, no, you don't slap a referee in the face and get away with it. You know, things like that happen.
Do you get angry when you reffed when guys would blatantly, like, blow their opponent right in front of you? Because that would always aggravate my buddy, because he's like, dude, I'm looking right at, make me, you know, put me in a position, talk to me, get me in a position where I can't see that, because it looks really bad on me when you kick a dude, you know, below the belt, or, you know, you're choking a guy or whatever, and you're putting the heat on me. Do something about it. What do you think? I mean, your two cents worth.
Yeah, I mean, as far as being a referee, it took me a little while. I was a little tentative when I was first starting to learn. But, I mean, there's a couple of situations where you just got to get, you know, you're the referee. You're the story is you're the boss in the ring. You know, you have to be a little bit invisible, but you also have to manage some semblance of control. So if somebody, you know, there was a couple of guys that were in a corner and they were choking each other. Well, first of all, they were in the corner, they were touching the ropes, they were choking each other. So I had to physically get in the middle of them and pull them apart. And, you know, one or two of them, actually one of them got pissed off. And I'm like, you know, I'm backstage and I'm like, dude, you know, what are you doing? And this is like, there's no rules, there's no story. I'm doing my job. You know, I'm pulling you apart, and I was a little bit physical with you because you guys weren't pulling apart. So obviously I would have had to disqualify the match or stop the match or something. I let you guys keep going. So it's once in a while it's happened, but for the most part, I've worked with a lot of different people, but for the most part, they want to tell their stories. They want to get their stuff in. Sometimes they get a little heated. Well, if you got to tell them, hey man, you got 2 minutes left, or hey, you got to hit this spot before you, you know, whatever. Cause the referee's telling them a lot of different things because they're trying to work the match, but the referee's got a semblance of the time and the story that needs to be told. So, you know, most of the time it's okay, but that's the one I remember. This is just a pull apart there. But other than that, everything's pretty cool.
I got a bizarre one for you guys. There was a show, I actually had to get involved in helping with this. Our promoter at the time was really ticked off about the match is just taking too long from the allotted time. And he was putting on the referees, and one of these referees was a national guy. And he asked me to go to the nearest place I could find stopwatches to put stopwatches on the referees to make sure the matches ended on time. Referees were not going to go for that. Did not happen. But I did buy the watches for the promotion.
Yeah, they had I've seen maybe one or two referees actually wear a watch, but I don't agree with that. It's like, it's got to be up here.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you see a stopwatch,
I mean, that's really blatant. And the story that you tell in the crowd is that this is work. Like, you don't want them to believe this is work. I mean, obviously they know it is, but to suspend disbelief. But if you have a stopwatch there
Well, it was a stop. Well, it was around your wrist, but it had timer.
Normally,
it wasn't completely obvious.
Normally, if it's a timekeeper that's out there, or the ring announcer, or even the ring announcer, John, you would know that. You know, you guys have you guys can keep in a sense of the time, and then there's you pull what's called the Iggy. You know, you tell the referee, it's like, hey, you messed with your tie, your glasses or something. That's telling the referee, hey, man, you got to take it home right now.
I was gonna say that was always my cue was always, I'm going to stand up and like grab the mic and fiddle with it like I'm getting ready, that's when you go tell the guys to go home. You know, especially if they were going long, the ref would always look to see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If I was standing up behind the table, time to go home.
Yeah, there's a little subtle cues that that the audience usually doesn't ever know about. But, you know, and there's signals from the back. If somebody's out in the curtain, you know, you can see back from the curtain. If somebody's, you know, just giving a sign or something, it's like one person telling another person, telling somebody else to get it to the referee to tell them. But you put it on the referees, but it's really the performer's job, because it's, if the referee is not communicating with the wrestlers, that's one thing. Because the referee is the main point of communication between everybody. And I learned that too. I mean, I'm not giving the referees. It was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat who actually physically told me referees are unsung heroes if they're doing it right. Because if you don't have a referee in the match, it's just a fight, you know, it's not telling a story, but a referee can do those subtle differences with the cadence of the count and, you know, how he or she, let me say, is controlling the pace of the match. You know, there's some things that a referee can see that the wrestlers can't. If the wrestlers are going too fast, the referee could say, slow it down, take your time. Or if you need to speed it up, you know, if you got time to take, you've got to take it home, you got to go home, you know, keep working, you know. Or the referee can say, hey, sell a little more, or, you know, lay them in. You know, the referee can tell if there's a punch that doesn't look good or a kick that doesn't look good. It's like, man, lay it in, do something. Now, obviously, we talked about egos earlier. These guys know what they're doing. but that good referees that have a good relationship with their workers can have those little subtle differences. But the communication usually is something that you can't see. A lot of guys, when they had the hair back in the 80s, it was easy to roll the hair over and have it over the mouth and the eyes, and then you can have a full conversation with somebody. And not even know it, like you know, the guy, the Rock and Roll Express, you know, the Midnight Express, those guys with the long 80s hair, things like that. So good stuff. That's part of Michael Spedden time right there. That's what I want to see, the throwback to the old 80s hair. I'm starting to grow that back. You know, during quarantine, a lot of people were growing it. So
yeah, look at that head of hair on you. You started growing that out for Little Abner when you were doing that show.
Yeah, that was something we were supposed to do a year ago. You talked about other entertainment, but you know, maybe we'll get back to doing some on stage theater. I don't know. It'll be distanced away from each other, wearing shields. I don't know how that's going to happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, I know. There's still a lot yet to be seen with that and everything. So,
and the barbershop singing too, Mike. You know, yeah,
that's going to be the last to open back up.
Yeah,
they're trying. Live acting is going to be right behind it or right ahead of it, you know.
Keep an eye on that. They're trying to work some things out. So keep an eye on it.
Well, good. So, you know, so right now we're kind of running short on time. So what I'd like to do right now.
Oh, he's telling us to go home. Oh, there
it is. Telling us to bring it home. John. Well, then one of you has to get out of.
From the bar. Go get the drink. You know what's going. You know what's happening.
Well, one of you has to distract me and then hit me from behind with a foreign object. then I get passed out, and then you just keep wrestling, and then I wake up as if it's 2 minutes later or something. But
Mike, I will tell you, I do have something. I can't completely divulge it yet, but I do have an iron in the fire with current wrestling.
Good.
But I can't talk about it right now.
Well, we will have you back.
A little bit, but yeah, something's going on.
Well, we will have you back. You know, so you can tell us when the time is right. Definitely.
Oh, believe me, I'll be the promo guy for what's going on, but I can't do it tonight.
Yeah. So what we will do right now is, and this is the portion of the evening when I have the shameless plugs, where you can shamelessly plug anything that you have as shamelessly as you want to be. Now, Ed, you have that, which you can't tell us about. However, boy, have you been busy lately? I've been seeing a lot of you lately. Tell us about that, where we can see you and that sort of thing.
Well, I do. I once a month, I join the crew on a wrestling podcast. It's called The Podcast Pit. It's filmed out in Hagerstown, and they bring me out there once a month to give like a historical perspective. This past week, we did wrestling history in the region, Baltimore, D.C., and of course, because we were up there, Hagerstown and Frederick. Mm-hmm. And that we've uncovered some interesting stuff out in that area. And that that podcast is out there. if anybody's interested and you want to friend me on Facebook, I can, it's up on my main page.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Mike, you still got the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast going on. Tell us about that. And you just launched another episode, I see, right?
Yeah. Episode 92. We're on our way to 100. And, we've had a lot of different platforms, the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast, myself and my partner, the Big Ugly, and several different guests every so often. CM Punk, the king of social distancing. He is. And we've got Jam and Jason. And of course, you've joined us on the podcast several times, and it's been great. Yeah, we talk about pro wrestling. We talk about anything that we run off on tangents all the time. It's a lot of fun. You know, we're not right. We're not wrong. We're just fans. It's a basically a fan. It's fans of professional wrestling, fans of life. You know, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Google Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast to find us 10 other places. But it's free. It's usually once a month and sometimes a little bit more. You know, we're on the road to WrestleMania, so we're talking a lot about that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of fun, and you can join us anytime you want to be a guest, anytime you want to put some content on Facebook or Twitter, you know, we'll shout you out, and it's just a lot of fun. And pretty looks like what we're shooting for is by the end of the year, we're going to do 100th episode, and I'm planning on inviting every single guest that we've had so far. We're going to do a big Zoom meeting like this, and it's going to be a wild time. I want to have everybody talking over each other. It's going to be totally incoherent. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you've also had Ed on the show too.
Yeah, well, we're working that out. Yeah, Ed, we've been
trying to get that yet.
It's working.
That would be fun. We'll definitely do that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've got the list of things that we need to talk about, you know, wrestling history, championship titles. By the way, I took your suggestion and I did get the big green belt, Ed. Yeah, there we go. There's a couple of your titles right there.
Nice.
Yeah, I know the light's kind of crappy, but
that's all right. I'll turn it around and I got a hole in the place here. I got a whole huge thing of titles, but I did end up getting the big green belt.
You have to show me a picture of it, how it came out.
I will. It's actually pretty good. The detail is pretty good. Yeah. The size is pretty good. I'll send you a nice detailed picture. And same people. I also got the 1986 WWF championship, the one transitioned out of the big green belt, but before the Winged Eagle title. The one he had at Hogan had at WrestleMania 3. So that's a nice one too. So yeah, so check out the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast and just find me, Mike Dells, DELSS, just find me on any of these platforms and we'll have a good time. But Ed, you and I definitely got to connect because
that sounds great. Definitely.
Right after WrestleMania, the next podcast, that's you. That's you and me, brother.
All right. Awesome. We'll talk.
Yes, sir.
And John Orlando, finally, shamelessly plug whatever you have. We know that you're, tell us about your podcast and everything else you have going on.
Well, the PVD cast is my own personal podcast where I talk about wrestling, comics, hockey, movies, the things I'm very passionate about. As a matter of fact, today, a new episode just dropped. Allison Morgan, she is a former Ohioan that now lives in New York City. And she just had a film short picked up by Hulu. And she's also appeared on SVU, Law and Order SVU, several times as a recurring character. So we talk about acting. We talk about living in New York, rom-coms, her movie First Date, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it's a great episode. So check it out over at pvdcast.com or through all those major podcasting outlets. You can find me on Twitter. My personal handle is at PVDMVP. There's a Facebook and Instagram for the PVD cast. It's at PVD cast. And if I may, Michael, I'd like to just plug real quickly that you can catch yours truly this Saturday on IWTV as the Ohio Wrestling Alliance presents Choose Your Champion event. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a 4-episode series that kicks off this Saturday morning. I'll be behind the play-by-play desk calling all the action. So check it out, folks.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, guys, it sounds like you have lots of great things to plug and everything. And folks, definitely check them out. Definitely check them out. Lots of worthwhile and quality stuff there. So
PVD cast right there.
Thank you. There you go.
There we go.
So John, we got to hook up too. So we can.
Okay, you got it.
Promotion.
All right. You absolutely. Got it, man.
Absolutely. Well, folks, we've had John Orlando, Ed Stilk, and Mike Dells here on Foul Players Radio, our another wrestling special. And you've not heard the last of these. We'll be back with some more of this down the road. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Good night, guys.
See you guys.
Bye.
Howdy. It's Matt Gwynn here, popping in to let you know about the adventures of the albino rhino. It's a show. Frank the Giraffe here, my co-host James Godwin, and myself put on for you guys twice a week. Every Wednesday, we talk to a comedian, and every Friday, we call it Freak Yeah Friday. The show itself is not safe for work, and that freak is definitely a different word. I just don't know what podcast you're going to be listening to this promo on, and I don't want to, start screaming explicatives while you're sitting in your office, if you're lucky enough to have been able to go back to the work that you did before inside of an office or whatever, you know. But we go on an adventure twice a week, and it's a good time because we get to sit down and talk to some really cool people. And I enjoy it because, you know, I'm just curious little albino who likes to get to know folks, you know. You can find us a couple ways, actually multiple ways, really. Man, there's a lot of different ways to find us. You can find us through our central hub, which is www.albinorhino.me. It's the website. Find me on. And then, you know, the podcast, you can find the videos on YouTube. Search for Adventures of the Albino Rhino, also linkable from our website. And you can also find us through Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Radio Public, and Spotify. That's right. We're on the same place Joe Rogan is. Granted, we're not the Joe Rogan Experience, but you know what I mean? We're there. So give us a listen. Promise you won't be dissatisfied. And enjoy your day.
What is going on, minions? Mike here for Misery Point Radio, and you're listening to the Coast to Coast Power Hour on the SJ Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, what the F is a Coast to Coast Power Hour? Well, my uneducated and uninformed friend, the Coast to Coast Power Hour is a Borg-like collective of epic podcasters from epic podcasts that have all come together to discuss the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, random awesomeness, stuff like that. Trust me, you need this in your life. For more information on this show and all the shows on the Coast to Coast Power Hour, as well as on the SJ Network, reach out to publicist Steve Joyner at www.s-j-network.com or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. No need to thank me. I'm just out here, you know, changing lives.
What's Your Effin' Binge is a podcast brought to you by Chris, Anchor, and Spotify. And what we talk to our guest about is what they're currently binge-watching on TV. And what we do is we like to take a different approach. I don't want to know what the name of the show is that they're going to talk about before they come on. I have to actually guess it. So I ask them who, what, when, where, why, and try to figure out what it is that they're watching. A lot of times I'm able to guess it, and sometimes I'm not. And that's fine. That adds to the comedy of the show. We like to bring our guest on, whether they're a model or an actress or a producer or musician, and just let them have a platform to be able to tell everybody what they have coming up next, and also entertain everybody with what's worth watching. So I hope everybody tunes in for the next episode of What's Your Effin' Binge. Thanks. It's Chris.